Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller.
People are always talking about the N-word. Should we use it? Should we not use it?
We're here today because Tiffany's parents are offended by the N-word.
Red is for the plaintiffs, the Johnson family. Green is for the defendant, the Pennybaker Preparatory School. What does this jury say? Wow.
There are few words as controversial and divisive as the N-word. Its history and context are explored in the documentary Trial by Jury, The Case of the N-Word, airing tonight at 11 on WHYY-TV. Joining me with a preview is Trial by Jury's producer, Kyle Bowser. Kyle, thanks for joining us on Newsworks Tonight. This production is actually a three-piece suite. What was the conceit putting it together?
Well, for me, always, there's been a fascination with one question, and that is, what happens in the jury room once the door closes? Several years ago, obviously by this reference you'll know how long ago, I had two separate conversations with two separate learned attorneys on each coast, West Coast and East Coast. The first conversation was with Alan Dershowitz from Harvard Law in New York, and he said something to me that was then echoed by Johnny Cochran back in Los Angeles where I live. And they both said the same thing, which is, I've been practicing law for 30-some-odd years, and there's one thing I can tell you nothing about, and that is what happens on the other side of that door. And so I've always had a fascination with that and wondered, what would happen if I put cameras in there and captured what happens on the other side of that door, the jury deliberation process? We assume that there's sort of a sterile environment and there's such objectivity and open-mindedness. But in fact, what I think happens is people bring with them their baggage. They bring all the prejudices, their biases, their preconceived notions of how the world should spin. And they apply that to the case at hand.
There is such a protocol and regimen to the proceedings in the courtroom, but you're saying behind that closed door, no holds barred.
The last thing they hear before they go into the room are instructions from the judge, who tells them very precisely what the question is that they're being asked to answer, with respect to guilt or innocence, with respect to liability. But oftentimes when they go into the room, and I've only discovered this or confirmed this as a result of this project, when they go into that room, what ultimately happens is they rely on their own life experience to answer those questions. And often what comes back to the courtroom is not really necessarily a pointed answer to that question, but instead a consensus of a bunch of strangers who weren't there on the day in question, really don't have a firsthand understanding of what happened, but they're responding to the best of two storytellers, a plaintiff's attorney and a defense attorney.
Now, in a real court, ideally, the jury is comprised of a jury of peers of the defendant. In this case, you're looking for a much broader cross-section.
Yeah, we're dealing with a civil litigation here, and so the outcome of the trial will be determined by a majority, not a unanimous decision, which is what is required in a criminal matter. So what we decided to do was take controversial issues and run them through the format of a trial, an abbreviated trial, but a trial nonetheless. There's a judge, there are attorneys representing parties, and they each present their respective cases. And then we ask these jurors to then go into the room and deliberate and come to a verdict. And the case that we decided to focus on in this particular instance involves a young 9-year-old girl,
Tiffany,
who during the month of February, Black History Month, was taught a lesson by her teacher about the civil rights movement. And during the discussion of the marchers and the heroism and the water hoses and the dogs and the taunting from hecklers, the teacher decides to use the N-word. So when Tiffany returns home from school and tells her parents what she's learned that day, her parents are incensed. This is a 9-year-old girl in the fourth grade.
Tiffany is Black.
She is Black.
The teacher?
The teacher is also African American. But this set of parents has taken painstaking effort to shield their child from that word and many others, but that word in particular. So they know that the school has taken a liberty in introducing the word to their child. They think it's of particular interest also that this is a private school and they pay a tuition, and they think that the school should have sought their consent if they were going to take that liberty, much like you would expect if the school was going to teach sex education. And there are those who believe the same would hold true in a public school environment. But anyway, so they bring a lawsuit of negligence against the school for this action. The school has a very affirmative defense in believing that they took that liberty, and rightly so. They feel that the educational environment is the most appropriate place to teach this kind of language or the meaning of this language.
Rather than in the schoolyard.
Exactly. It's certainly better than learning it on the corner, right? And they also believe that the subject of Black history is given, too often is given short shrift, and that they need to delve more deeply into the authenticity of the subject matter. And so it's from that perspective that they decide to use the word.
And so it ensues that the attorneys for each side try to impress those who will be making the decision.
And we've got 12 real people who weren't there that day, who don't know Tiffany, don't know the teacher, but have their own life experiences that they now use to decide which of these two parties should prevail.
Clearly, you didn't just select the first 12 people you saw on the street.
No, we went through it. Well, in real life, the jury selection process is called voir dire. And we went through our own voir dire process and came up with a nice cross-section, a diverse group of people, all of whom have a life experience and opinions that are relevant, and thought that they could bring something to the discussion.
You, too, have a life experience that's relevant. And let's note, yes, you live in Los Angeles, but your roots are in Philadelphia, and you went to Central High and then Widener Law School. Were you able to take your point of view fully out of this mix?
I'm sure not. I certainly tried to as a producer. There are times when I had to deliberately sort of stack the deck in order to provoke a discussion. There are certain facts of the case that I, you know, played with or ways in which we produced it. For instance, while the parents of Tiffany are African-American, their attorney is a white male. But the attorney representing the school is a Black female. And I thought it would be an interesting sort of juxtaposition to see a white male argue against the use of the word, while the Black female argue that in certain instances, and in this instance in particular, she thought it was highly appropriate for the use of the word. So in addition to watching these 12 people deliberate and then come to a verdict, we also now have been screening this event for live audiences in theaters around the country.
Including WHYY.
Exactly.
You had a screening over the weekend.
That's correct. And we asked the audience to watch the playback of the video. And then we have a town hall discussion with the audience and allow them to speak out and be heard on this subject. And as you can imagine, the opinions run a full gamut from those who are very much opposed to the word, those who think it is a waste of time to even talk about the word. We also allow the TV viewers to participate in this process. So you're watching the show at home on Tuesday night. And when it's over, we have a website you go to and you get to vote online as to whether or not you agree with the plaintiff or the defendant.
In the course of these town halls, have you encountered any surprises along the way?
You know, one of the things that I anticipated was the split between generational lines. I expected that older audiences would be more opposed to the use of the word, and younger folk might see that it certainly has a relevance in today's society that should be open and transparent. But I have been surprised at times when I heard older people talk about the value of the word and the need to preserve the word as a part of our historical fabric.
Conversely, have you heard young people who argue against the use of
Absolutely.
The word?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are people who, you know, it was a young person who reminded me that there are people who heard that word just before they took their last breath, just before the noose tightened around their neck. And that was surprising to hear that come from a younger person.
To what extent was your project either inspired by or a collaboration with an earlier Washington Post front page article?
Interesting. The Washington Post is in support of this project. In fact, they have allowed me to use a short film clip when I show it in front of live audiences of a piece that they did all about. They did a tremendous expose on the N-word. And one of the things that comes up in our discussion is this idea that the N-word, the term, the N-word, is itself a cop-out. Because as we use that term, you know what the reference really is, and I know what the reference really is, but we somehow have sanitized the conversation by not using the word. But we haven't really removed the essence of that thought from our dialogue. I think it was comedian Louis C.K. who really sort of honed in on that subject and said that it really puts the onus on the listener to hear the word while the speaker gets to be exonerated from having not used it.
Is this intended to provide a definitive answer to the question, or is it to open a conversation that will be continuing for perhaps generations more?
Trial by jury as a franchise is intended to focus in on topical and sort of hot button issues, run them through this format of a trial and then the jury deliberation, and provoke dialogue and provoke thought, some head scratching. Whether it ends up being the definitive word, I would tend to doubt it. I know the NAACP a few years ago staged an event where they literally buried the N-word. I mean, they held a funeral service and a burial for the N-word, and it was a nice publicity stunt.
Paradoxically, of course, you're empowering that word by giving it such power.
Totally. And so, no, I don't believe any of these episodes, if you will, or installments will ultimately be the final word on any of these issues. But it certainly, hopefully, will provoke people to think about some things that they perhaps hadn't considered before.
And among those considerations, above and beyond the specific word, considerations about racial equality, race relations?
Yeah. The etymology of the word is even in dispute.
And you cite in the website, it specifically says in the American language.
The American
it doesn't
language.
Say in English, it says in the American language.
That's right, because there is information available that suggests in ancient Egypt, the word N-I-G-G-U-S actually refers to royalty.
It's pretty much beyond dispute that Middle Eastern natives at that time were dark-skinned.
Oh, absolutely. And so the question becomes whether or not the original derivation of that word really suggested a good or a bad thing. We are most focused in, of course, on the American history, and we know that that word evolved out of a very ugly past, the past of slavery. And we, as an African-American community, have now sort of embraced that word to mean some very ugly things. But there are those who now say that by reclaiming the word, by reimagining the word, and actually allowing it to be used by a broader swath of population than just the African-American community, we actually take the sting out of the word.
Is there anything analogous to the recent debate and controversy over the Confederate flag? Is there some way in which this word can be relegated to a museum, as it were?
You know, I think ultimately what we're talking about here is a property right. The question is, who does the history belong to, and who gets to claim the ownership and control over it? The African-American community does not tend to have the institutional wealth that we see in other communities. And so what we often cling to, which the president used that word clinging and it was somehow a negative thing, but what we often cling to is our culture as our primary asset, whether that be the way we express ourselves through song or through fashion or through dance or the cooking or the many ways in which we express ourselves. One of the other elements of our ownership, our property, is our pain, which is steeped in a very, very challenging history. And I think the N-word is an extension of that pain. And the question is, do we own that property or does the world at large own that property? Who gets to define when it's appropriate to use that word or not? And as I said, there are those who believe that the more we make it available and loosen the ties and let go of all of that baggage that's associated with the word, the less sting that it has. And I don't know if there's any other word in our language that has that kind of impact. It, you know, causes people to draw a line in the sand quite the same way. I do know that as I was growing up, the word queer was certainly intended to be a derogatory term. But I know that the LGBTQ community has now embraced that word and decided that it should be celebrated.
Queer Nation.
Exactly. And so I'm wondering if the N-word is sort of going through that same metamorphosis.
Kyle Bowser, thanks so much for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
It's been my pleasure.
Kyle Bowser is the producer of the documentary Trial by Jury, The Case of the N-Word, airing tonight at 11 on WHYY-TV.